This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 205, sponsored by Blast Rider from Funimation, discount comic book service, and iFanboy listeners like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 205. My name is Ron Richards, and it's fantastic to be back here in the iFanboy studios with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello, Ron.
And Josh Flanagan.
Hola, bienvenidos.
We are from iFanboy.com, where we like comics and we read comics, and every week one of us goes through our stack of books we bought and or read and picks the best one and deems it the pick of the week and goes to iFanboy.com to write a review about it, where many of you go to comment and discuss about it. But then we come back here on the podcast to talk about it, as well as all the other comics that came out this past week. Connor had the pick this week, but before we get to it, I'm going to remind you that we're going to talk about what happened in the books, so we might spoil them for some folks who are sensitive to that. So if you haven't read your books yet, you might want to press pause, come back after you've read them, or just be warned in general. Like I mentioned, Connor had the pick, and take it away, my good friend.
The pick of the week was Irredeemable number 7 from Boom Studios, and we're all reading this, right? We're all
yes.
Irredeemable? Yes.
Are we all reading The Mighty, or is it just me and Josh?
No, I need to catch up because I love it. But Chris Somney's off The Mighty, though, isn't he?
Well, it's over.
It's over? Oh.
Well, he's not off it, and it's not over yet, but he finished the last issue of this initial 12.
Okay.
And we'll get to that.
I'm going to read it in trade. But okay, go ahead.
But because it's tied into The Mighty, so it's just curious. These two books have come out together on the same week, I guess the entire time, and they're very similar concepts of the superhero gone bad. And both books treat this subject matter differently in different kind of tones and different kind of stories. Both good, both great books. And in both books we've been waiting for the two things to happen. One, in Irredeemable, we've been waiting for some answers as to why Plutonian, the hero of this book, or the guy who was the hero is now the villain, became the villain. And in The Mighty, we've been waiting for the moment when the Alpha One, the hero in that book, really, really goes bad. So both those things happened in this week, and so it was a really hard choice for pick of the week because these are things that have been almost a year in the making.
Did a part of you wish that it was 4 years ago and you could have picked both?
Yes. 4 years ago, I would have taken the covers into Photoshop, split them in half, and that would have been the pick of the week. The reason why I went with Irredeemable, and it was a really tough choice, I ended up holding them both in my hands and thinking about which book had more to it. I think Irredeemable won out because there's more going on in the story. That doesn't mean it's a better story. I think The Mighty is an excellent comic, but there was more to latch on to. There's a lot more happening in the story. The Mighty's more about Alpha One and this one guy, whereas there's a lot of elements going on in Irredeemable, a lot of things to think about and discuss, and a lot of things that I think are really impressive from Mark Waid, the writer, and Peter Krause, the artist. In this issue, we flash back to basically the moment that tipped Plutonian over the edge. He's the Superman character. He was feeling overwhelmed by all of the constant pleas for help and calls for help and emergency signals, everything that he can hear constantly. And I really liked the way it was portrayed, with him just being constantly surrounded by thought bubbles. Not even, just constant noise around him of people in trouble or in need, really showing the pressure that a Superman would be under. I mean, something that's never dealt with in the DC book, because they can't. I mean, it would drive anyone insane to be constantly hearing people that need your help and never being able to deal with all of it. And I liked that was the start of it. And then the thing that happens in this book is there's an alien invasion that Plutonian turns back, and everybody in the world wants the technology, but he doesn't want to give it up because, you know, it might be bad for the people. So finally, he's being attacked in the media, he's being attacked in the blogs, he's being attacked by the pundits, and finally, just to shut them up, because he's tired of hearing it, he's tired of hearing everything all the time from everyone, he gives a little piece of technology over, and it ends up going very, very badly. And I liked learning all this. I liked it all made sense. Obviously, Plutonium was a person who was already a little bit unbalanced anyway, but this was the moment we finally find out why he went from hero to villain. And a lot of it has to do with guilt, I think. And a lot of it just has to do with he was probably already a little crazy. And I loved that. And I loved the story going on in the present, where the heroes have invaded his Fortress of Solitude. And they're finding clues. And I really liked the creepy little touches that Mark Waid drops in, like the room dedicated to Bette Noir.
That was awesome.
His female teammate. Very creepy.
Do you think he was creepy? Like, did he have that room all along, or was that like along a continuum? Like, what I'm wondering is,
I think he had it all along.
What? So he was always kind of a closet perv?
I think so.
Okay.
I mean, that's just total speculation. I don't think there's any clues either way. But
what's fantastic is not so much that it's a room dedicated to Bette Noir, but there's freaking statues in the room.
Naked ones.
Yeah, like, did he commission those?
Right, exactly.
Or did he do them with his heat vision? Like, we don't know.
And the paintings huge, and the photographs.
Huge statues. I can understand a room full of like frantic, crazy pictures up on the wall and stuff like that. But you're looking at she walks into the door. So she's like, what, five? Let's say she's 5'5", okay? She's right. A superhero. That one statue's got to be at least 20 feet tall.
Right.
What is he doing there?
Is that one painting, is she attached like in a bondage outfit? I think she might.
She's got a collar around her, because there's one statue where she's holding a whip too.
Right.
It's a little creepy.
Yeah,
I love how she opened up and sees it, and then she shuts it and goes dead end.
I like how you read that scene like it was a Muppet. I think that's how you just read it to me. Nothing to see here, guys. Dead end. I read it. I had a different read on that line, but whatever works for you. It's comic for you.
I think mine is closer to Ron's, but. those are the elements about this issue I really liked. I mean, it was funny and it was creepy. I mean, it was. I laughed at first, then I went, ugh.
Well, I think the lesson to be learned here is, can you just give me 5 minutes apiece?
Yes.
My God, you people just won't shut up.
He gives the tech over and
he flies to the moon just to get a moment of peace where he can't hear everybody on Earth. And in those 5-10 minutes. The tech is activated and lots of people die, including lots of children. That's sort of the thing that turns him over.
The only thing that annoyed me was that, he takes 10 minutes apiece to go sit on the moon and get away from it. And of course, that's when shit happens. But the only thing that kind of annoyed me about it, I got everything about it. I was with it. I'm really enjoying the whole series. But the moment that puts him over the edge, when he saves this guy on his boat and the guy's bitching about the damage to his boat and asks him to fix it, like, I wonder if that would really happen. You know, like,
yes,
you know,
yes, it happens to cops and first responders all the time. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All
right. Oh my God.
Totally. Oh, well, people suck then. All right.
Just the last 3 years of Manhattan, I had no problem understanding that as being a reality of things happening. It's like, you can try to be nice and you can try to be, you know, courteous and you can do whatever, but it's like, it's never going
to
be taken by somebody the same way that you're giving it.
They had to enact laws to protect first responders from lawsuits.
Oh, really?
Because people would sue them for damaging their car when they had to rip it open to get them out, during an accident, or breaking their your chest bone, you know, doing for you know compressions on it. They had to do that because people are awful like that.
Yeah. You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of my dog in that, like, if I give him, like, a treat, he doesn't go, oh, that was great, thanks, I'm good now. He just goes, another one.
Yeah.
And he just looks at me, and it's like that's what people are in this.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is that far off, unfortunately.
Certainly. All right, I can see that
you
point.
Know, yeah. You know what's funny is that originally when the first one came out, I liked it and everything, but I was a little reticent because I think, you know, there was no reason. It was just was what it was. And he's told this sort of backwards, and it ended up paying off very much. So, yeah. Like, you know, when I saw that Connor had picked this, I thought, yeah, that makes very good sense. You know, I gave it's a 5-star book. And I think the really fun thing about this is that every issue has been better than the one before it.
Yes.
Every single time, and every single one is added to what's going on, and that makes it really fun and exciting every time that a new one comes out. Also, I think we got to give credit to Peter Krause, whose art is noticeably getting better. Not that there was anything wrong with it, but I just remember reading this one going, you know what, he's getting better, he's getting yep. It's more impressive.
I really love that one page where it's his big head, and around him is all the stuff he's hearing or experiencing, or the stuff he's done all day long. And it's just it's a way of artistically showing it's all emanating out of his head, and it's all getting to him, and he just can't deal with it anymore. He just can't. Also, creepy was I forgot to mention they run into the woman who he had dressed up like Betty Noir.
Remember that? Yeah.
That was also creepy. Yeah. Like, it's really. I like that he's not only evil, but he's like creepy. Like he's a little bit perverted.
Yep.
He keeps a sex slave.
Yeah.
It was these
elements together that it's a deeper story than Mighty, which again isn't to say Mighty's a bad story. It's just a different type of story. So there's a lot of things going on here that are really impressive to me.
And you know what? I think I'm sorry, Josh, real quickly. I mean, like, we're 7 issues in, so it's about half a year. I mean, and you're saying Peter Krause is getting better. I think the book is getting better, and it's just like an example of two creators working together on a run. Like, this is what can come of it. Each one builds on the momentum.
Sure. Well, I think that what you're seeing here is Mark Waid. In a bunch of ways. I mean, Mark Waid to us, you know, to me, is a guy from the mid to late 90s was when he was really hitting it on all cylinders. And then, you know, in the first half of the 2000s, he kind of kicked around for a while, not really finding a great project. Again, he'd been on a bunch of things, and a lot of things didn't work out as well. But here, he's got, A, the freedom to kind of do whatever he wants, and B, and I'm speculating, I've heard a lot of interviews with Mark Waid, and he's a guy who kind of wears his emotions on his sleeves. Like, he's the guy who will say everything in an interview about everybody.
Yep.
And I can't help but think that with this character, the Plutonian, you know, who's doing everything for everybody and constantly still hearing shit about it, like, that sounds to me like a comic creator reacting to his audience a little bit. And I don't think it's that far of an analogy off, you know, just because even to watch like his Twitter feed, like the picture is a little frustrated rabbit cartoon thing, you know, and like he's got this kind of irritability thing that I think that he's baked into the character that actually made it work really well. So you take that Superman and then you mix it with that, you know, this one guy trying to do good in the world, and it come out with this new thing, which is like this opposite of the Astro City thing that Connor mentioned. You know, it's the sort of realistic flip side of what would actually happen if you couldn't get away from all that stuff.
Yeah, well, I don't know how much of, I mean, every writer brings a little piece of himself to the table, but I mean, that's really inside baseball to try, you know, to assume that this is his, like, you know, response to the fans. But I could see, given what he's kind of gone through the past couple of years, I can't deny it's probably a piece of it is fueling this, you know?
Oh, I mean, yeah, I'm not saying that he's going to go nuts and have a room full of anyway. but I think there's definitely something there to that. That's just, you know, it's my speculation.
God, that room was creepy.
Ugh, that was awesome.
One panel. The Mighty, it was also excellent, and I really almost picked this one. So this story in the Mighty is Alpha One is the hero of this world, and it's a DC book that doesn't take place in the DCU. It's a completely separate book. I don't know why it's not out of Wildstorm, but anyway.
Wild what?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's why. For the last 9 issues, we've been waiting for Alpha One. Alpha One's been getting increasingly creepier, increasingly sort of little acts of evil.
Or at least we're learning and we're seeing them. We hadn't
right,
seen
and
them
now yet. In this issue, he's gone full out, full bore. He's turned the corner. This is the moment we've been waiting for. Josh, did you love this as much as I did, or
this? You know, I was down to the same thing, and I lean towards this being my pick, which I think has to do with more of my taste as opposed to yours. You know, I like that it's a smaller story; it's set between these two people, and it's just a little more low key, I suppose, as opposed to Irredeemable, which is sort of a little more balls out. And there were a couple of moments in this one that really, because it's been so low key, like they actually really shocked you. And it wasn't the giant tidal wave moment, but like he flew through a person at one point. He was like, shit. And so he just takes off in a straight line. And in that straight line, he goes through a building and goes through like a person eating dinner. Like it's just it's a Steve Dillon kind of frame, really. There's that. And then the thing that's on the cover. It's right there on the cover. I mean, here's what happens in the book. Basically, you have Alpha One shooting his eye beams into the dude's mouth, and I, you know, in what is the scariest dental moment maybe ever.
Just taking out his windpipe, his voice box.
Yeah, no, that's not what happened at all. And the results of that, you know, with a really good cliffhanger at the end. This was a great issue. This is probably my favorite issue, the Mighty as well, so far. And if I had the pick this week, I probably would have gone with it. You know, but again, just barely in that one way. Great, great issue.
Yeah, and this is a book people need to read. The trade's coming out in December. The first six issues is probably going to be a 12-issue maxi series. That's what it was going to end up being, just because of sales. But it's one of the best books of the year.
Yes.
A and B, it's one of the biggest surprises of the year. It came out of nowhere. I bought it on a whim because I like Peter J. Tomasi, the writer, a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's just been fantastic. It started off with Peter Schneider's Jabberwock.
Snaber.
Peter Ikea Tabletop, and Chris Samney's doing currently the artist on it, and it's been a surprise out of nowhere. Fantastic, one of the best superhero books I've read in a while, and everyone needs to pick this up when it comes out in trade.
This is one of the sleeper book of the year.
Has the first volume come out on trade or no?
December.
Okay, I'm all over that.
Yeah, 1-6.
All over it.
Yeah.
Cool. So my pick of the week was Strange Tales #2 from Marvel. Which I noticed when I was in the store that I thought this was a Max series, and it's not. It's just a Marvel Knights series, which I thought was odd. But anyway.
I didn't like it as much as the last one. I thought
this one was better than the first one.
It's full of short stories, so some are going to be good, some are going to be bad. I thought it was a stronger lineup in the first one.
It's funny because I think it plays to each, you know, like to interest and things like that. I thought this was stronger and better than the second one. For those who hadn't heard, this is a 3-issue kind of mini-series anthology thing that, you know, kind of experiment, kind of, you know, vanity project that Marvel's doing by getting, you know, underground and independent creators to do little short stories with Marvel characters. So in this issue, we, you know, Peter Baggy continued his Hulk story. There's a Max Cannon story, Tony Millionaire, Jim Rugg and Brian Maruca, and Matt Kint. And for me,
Jonathan Hickman did a 3-page.
Well, yeah, I'm gonna get to that. So for me reading this, what I thought was interesting with this Strange Tale stuff is that I think it's really fascinating. A lot of these underground creators are taking the opportunity to do like send ups and do like kind of humorous, you know, takes. You know, so for example, like the first story is Tony Millionaire doing an Iron Man story, which, you know, despite the fact that he's fighting a bunch of guys with baloney heads, looked beautiful.
But bizarre.
Yeah, but then it ended with him fighting a ginormous Dwight D. Eisenhower head, as soon as the Eisenhower villain came in, I was like, oh yes, this is great. But what I thought was really interesting is that story, and then R. Kikuku Johnson's Puppet Master Alicia Master story, and then the beautiful Jim Rugg Brother Voodoo story. All these stories seem to be picking up off of either Silver Age or Modern Age, 70s kind of takes on these characters, not so much modern stuff.
Definitely 70s influence.
Yeah. Last time any of those guys read it.
Possibly. I don't know if it's a direction from the editorial, but it's a lot of, like, for example, Max Cannon did a great, I don't even know, the 2-page telling his unfortunate 3 story instead of the Fantastic Four, which was hysterical. But they all had that kind of throwbacky kind of feel. The two standouts for me the most were, and I'm a little biased because I saw these original pages at the Windy City Comic Con, but Matt Kint, who we're going to talk about a little later on in the show, you can't tell me his Black Widow story was not fantastic.
It was beautiful.
It was beautiful. Yeah. It wasn't, you know, send-up-y or anything. Like, it was a straight-up Black Widow story.
Yeah.
You know,
But in that sense, it was a little incongruous to the rest of the book.
Yeah, because all the other ones are doing send-ups, and he's telling this very, you know, kind of his style, you know, serious kind of story, It was just beautiful, looked great. But then I was cracking up because I turned after the Peter Baggy Hulk story, and there's these four pages of recruitment posters that Hickman did.
Yeah, those are good.
In his graphic design style, which I didn't expect to see Hickman pop up in this group, because now I put Hickman in the kind of all mainstream people. And not only were these funny, but they looked beautiful, and like these could be posters.
Yeah.
You know, so
I don't know. Hickman was a bunch of small print and lots of charts and things.
Yeah, I mean, basically there were recruitment posters for like Galactus recruiting heralds, and then Terax and Fire Lord and Silver Surfer recruiting people for, you know, and it was just playing up on the tropes of those characters and what they're about and things like that. And it was fun. I just had a lot of fun reading this, and it was kind
MODOK of MODOK and Me was my favorite one.
MODOK and Me was good. That was really good. And I actually did like Jacob Chabot's looking good, Mr. Grim one after with the plant mask. But I don't know. It was the kind of thing where every page I turned, I had fun, you know, and like that's what an anthology should do. Like I was excited.
No, it was fun. I thought it was a stronger, but it doesn't mean it was bad. I gave it 4 stars.
And Josh, you might want to take note. Next issue's got, it looks like it's got a cover from Stan Sakai doing Hulk as a samurai.
Okay.
So,
are you still reading Asagi, Jimbo?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. In my world, you're the biggest Stan Sakai fan. So.
Yeah, that's not true. Okay. I read it for a while because I was like, I feel like some one of us should. And I was like, it's kind of cool, but basically it's kind of always the same.
Yeah.
And if you like that kind of thing, which a lot of people do, like it's like they're in, you know, I see James Robinson tweet that like, oh, my, everyone is amazing. And I'm like, well, they're all kind of the same. They're pretty good, but I kind of had enough.
Yeah. All right. And Jim Rugg on Brother Voodoo was just so cool. The production and the look to make it look throwbacky, like it's kind of like what he did in that Image next issue project, the same kind of style. It just looks so good.
Definitely leaf through it in the store if you see it. It's worth seeing all the different kind of art.
I mean, it's funny because I understand, because it's not, you know, it's difficult, because I think some people have had difficulty with it, because if you're a diehard Marvel fan, you're going to hate this, and if you're a diehard independent creator fan,
but you're a diehard Marvel.
Oh yeah, but I'm also a big underground independent guy too. You know, so like
you also have a sense of humor.
True, exactly. Yes, I also don't take things too seriously.
That is not what the Hulk should be wearing.
Exactly,
it's wrong. And I don't see what is so friggin' funny.
Yeah. So anyway, but yeah. So I can't wait for the third issue, and this is gonna be a great little collection when it comes out. And if it's anything, it's just get it from the Matt Kent Black Widow story. That was the standout. So. But
I don't know what to make of the Haunt number one, or
it's just
Haunt,
it's just Haunt number one, yeah.
Right, Haunt number one from Todd McFarlane, Robert Kirkman, Ryan Ottley, and Greg Capullo.
I enjoyed the first issue.
I feel like wearing an extra large shirt that has Michael Jordan on it, and right, listening to Blind Melon.
Well, that's the thing is that I enjoyed it, but looking at it, it's like, so you've got Kirkman wrote it and created it with McFarlane. And Greg Capullo, who did pencils and Spawn for like a decade, did the layouts. And then Ottley did the pencils. And then McFarlane did the inks. And yes, I just wonder if it's too much.
Too much, definitely. Yeah. You got none of what makes each guy special, and you got just parts of each one.
That's actually really good. That's an excellent analysis of I think, what we're looking at here.
Yeah.
Although I think you got I think we got McFarlane's inks.
We did.
Like it looked like McFarlane.
Yeah.
I suppose in that way, because Capullo, you know, it works that way. But I think the worst part for me is that I feel like we lost Ottley in there.
And the thing about that is that there were panels where I could see him.
Mm-hmm. It was like he was hiding in the distance. Yeah, exactly. You kind of make him out, but then a tree would come in, you know, mm-hmm, your view, and it was just a tree with lots of lines on it. Now, I'm saying that as a big McFarlane fan, and I like him. I just wish he'd either just drawn it, or Ottley just drawn it, or somebody just drawn it. But instead, I got partially of each guy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I wonder if it's the kind of thing, like, if they, I don't know how long they think they're going to keep this team up, this team going. Like, is McFarlane going to bail after the third issue or anything like that from the inks? You know, but I wonder if after 5 issues they figure it out and it becomes something unique. And, you know, because it's the first issue, you know, like you got to, mm-hmm, you know, but story wise, I thought it was interesting. It's an interesting take. I understood what was going on. It was a Kirkman book. There was, you know, violence and, you know, and.
Nice. You know, see, I didn't feel that. Like, I felt like there was a lot more. The creation of it was definitely McFarlane and Kirkman at the same time. Because to me, this is probably my least favorite Kirkman book that I've read in a long time. It didn't feel like I had any of that. I don't know, that je ne sais quoi of his personality that even like an Astounding Wolfman, it was there where you're just like, it's a little strange.
Yeah.
Like it was there. It's this combination. I guess what it is this combination of light and then really violent or heavy.
And this was dark. This was very dark.
Yeah. And there was nothing for me. I think for me, when I was reading, there was nothing for me to grasp on that I cared about or liked. I didn't, you know, I didn't like anybody in it. I didn't really care what happened or what was going to happen next, I guess.
Yeah.
It was fine.
I don't know if McFarlane's going to stay on it, but I'm not.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was just too weird. It was an interesting experiment, but I don't think it was successful.
I mean, I'm curious enough. I mean, I like the guy. I like Kirkman and Otley and McFarlane enough to be like I'm curious about it. So I'll keep going with it out of that curiosity. But yeah, it was weird though. It definitely
it was
like
bizarre.
It was like one of those things where like you know like a bunch like there was like the Traveling Wilburys.
Although they had good songs.
They had like one good, like two good songs.
The first album was at least half.
Yeah, I know, really but it was just like.
That is as far off the rails as we've gotten in a long, long
third
time.
Album.
Can anyone tell me?
After Roy Orbison died, it was.
Can anyone
never
tell me why Jeff Lynne was there at all?
He was their buddy. He was the producer. He produced all that stuff.
Wow. Are you people at home paying attention to this? Because this is. I mean, you thought the G.I. Joe stuff went off, but I want to see where this goes. Please, continue.
This is the greatest musical supergroup of all time.
No, but that's the thing is that on paper it was. Like, that's the thing is that you had Dylan, you had Orbison, you had Harrison, you know, like who else? You had
Tom Petty.
Tom Petty. Fucking Petty. I hate Tom Petty. But, right? And then you had Jeff Lynne randomly. And, like, they had the hit, you know? By the way,
Tom Petty fans, send those to Ron.
Oh, I like Tom Petty.
Fuck Tom Petty. He's awful.
Again, Ron and I. I don't send him to contact at iFanboy. Just straight to him.
but they had the one song, you know, I'm so tired of being lonely. Like they had that good song, but like honestly, even that first record, can you name one other song aside from that the single?
Weezer and the Monkey Man.
All right, can you name another song?
It's a good title.
It's a good title.
You can't blame a man for Weezer. I'm gonna download that. I don't even care. Can I name a band? Jesus. I think that was an Art Adams comic. We should probably move on. We should probably move on to Ultimate Spider-Man 3.
That might be the funniest thing you've said this year.
See you.
Ultimate Spider-Man number 3. How great is David LaFuente?
He's awesome. He's becoming one of my top five guys right now.
This book quickly makes it to the top of my stack because I read the books I'm most excited about first, purely to see what he's doing with the art. And it's like, and it's not even the action, which is fantastic, but it's the not action things that are just as great. Mm-hmm. So I love it. I love this book again.
It took the bad taste of Amazing Spider-Man out of my mouth. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Which was the worst issue I've read in quite a while.
Yeah. For Guggenheim didn't really go out on a high note, did he?
Unfortunate for because it's my favorite Marvel book, but that was awful.
Yeah.
But this was fun. This is great.
I thought the MJ Peter argument at the fast food place was awesome.
Well, it's funny because knowing Bendis' history from reading the autobiographical short story book he did,
Fortune and Glory.
Yes, he worked at a similar fast food restaurant, so I'm sure he's taking a lot of his own history.
Yeah.
Which I thought was funny.
But it's not even the fast food stuff. It was the argument with MJ.
No, but that stuff was good too. I mean, just the, you know, not even caring. And then the fight between them was great.
Yeah.
Very realistic.
The fight was just great. I mean, like I would appreciate the heads up. Return a call. You haven't called me in months. Like the banter was like, it was a great argument. It was just really good. So,
Yeah.
Love it.
So. And you can't beat the dynamic action scenes he draws, which is
and I love the way he handles the webs and everything. Like they're just honestly, you want a young, you know, teen Spider-Man. This is it. Like and it made me realize while I like the imminent stuff, it didn't actually resonate because I think it needs to be this. You know, so I like it.
Yeah, it's closer to what in the same vein as Bagley.
Yeah, but more modern. I think more actually relatable. Yeah, Bagley and LaFuente, don't get me wrong, they're completely different artists, you know. So
right, but it's still some similar style.
Yeah, so loved it.
It's actually Tweeter and the Monkey Man. I forgot. Still,
I take back everything I said, except for the Art Adams thing. That actually still works.
Yeah, because it's got the Monkey Man. That's what.
Also,
it is.
End of the Line is a good song too.
Fucking Jeff Lynne.
Literally, don't know what you're talking about. Let me take you to a place right now. Okay?
Okay.
A blood-borne plague races across Germany, giving life to mechanized monsters that are hellbent on leaving a bloody trail of victims in their wake. Known as demoniacs, these creatures have the perverse ability to meld with technology and wield it as an extension of their uncontrollable cyber rage. Standing in their way is civilization's last hope for a savior, Joseph Jobson. The mysterious Lone Rider fuses with the unreal technology of his battle-tested motorcycle to defend man against machine, but the same tainted blood that supplies his strength threatens to devour his soul, leaving him with nothing more than a murderous demon. Behold the Pale Rider, Blast Rider, Part 1, available on October 20th from Funimation Entertainment. Go to funimation.com/Blast Rider.
Hey, German motorcycle guy? That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I've got to say, out of all of them that I've read, that one, I was like, I'm kind of curious. Do they end, Blast Rider? Do they yell?
Schnell! Ally!
We're going to move on. Thank you to Funimation for sponsoring this episode. More comics now.
So Dr. Voodoo, Avenger of the Supernatural number 1 came out from Remender and Jeff T. Paolo. We talked to Remender a couple of weeks ago about this book, and so I was curious to pick it up because I had read the script, but I didn't see any art from it. And I thought the art was really good. It had a kind of reminded me of Riley Rossimo from Proof at times. I don't really – I've gone on record where I don't really like the magic stuff, but for some reason the Marvel magic stuff, because it's Marvel, I've kept track of it, and I actually do kind of like Dormammu and stuff like that. For a first issue, he packed in a lot with – it starts off with a fight with Dormammu, an argument with a very old-looking Doctor Strange, and then ends with a fight with Doctor Doom. So that's pretty solid for a first issue. So I like the idea of positioning Dr. Voodoo as kind of the watchtower of magic going on in the Marvel Universe, where he's got this room where he can see everything that's happening, that's magical. Because when you think about it, there's actually a lot of magic going on in Marvel. But yeah, it was a good...
So like the internet for magic.
Kind of. But
it's Twitter Google magic.
Well, it was neat because in this room, you see what is his name, Hellstrom, the son of Satan or whatever,
Damien Hellstrom. Damien,
yep, and then you see Doom sitting there, and you see Punisher fighting the Hood, and you see Marvel zombies chomping away at people, and it's just interesting to see that.
Zombies are magic?
I guess so. I don't know. Maybe
because no, we don't know in Marvel. We don't know what the
different
deal
dimensions because the idea of going through different dimensions. I guess maybe I don't know, but either way, it's a good. It's a good concept in that he's got to be the watcher over all kind of magic in the Marvel universe and be like the defender of it, so, or avenger of it. It was good. It was solid. So I'm gonna keep doing it. And it's Jeff T. Paolo, and his art was good. So
Jeff T.
Does he also live above a pink berry?
I don't know.
He should.
I don't know. Okay. He should. It's delicious.
Did you guys get which cover of Buffy did you get?
I got the one with the weird guy flying at you.
Oh, you didn't get the George Jonty homage to Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos cover?
No, I didn't get that.
It was awesome. Issue 29. Cover might have been the best thing about the issue.
Well, the weird thing about Buffy, and it's hard. I'm torn about this because I at least love this book.
Honeymoon seems to be over.
I'm getting close to dropping it, mostly because I've heard this season's going 40 issues. I thought it was almost over.
If they had finished at 22 or 23 like a TV season, they just would have gone out on top.
The problem I have is I kind of like this overall story, but I don't know who anyone is.
Yeah,
I know who the main characters from the show are simply from watching the show, but there's a lot of other people, and they all look very much the same because they're all women and they all have the same kind of hair.
Yeah,
and they're never ever identified, so I don't know who. There's no emotional resonance when anything happens to anybody because I don't know who this chick is.
The cast has gotten way too big, and the story I think has kind of spiraled out of control.
It's also like there are TV writers writing this, and while they're good writers, they don't write for comics where, I need to know who this person is that's talking because I don't know the actress because it's not on screen.
Whedon needs to come back and do the next arc. On the other hand,
I laughed hard during the torpedo scene.
Yes. Well, the thing was that basically it's a big kind of battleground kind of scene where, they're doing their kind of last stand type thing, and it very much had a Two Towers kind of feel to it where they're prepping for the battle and the battle happens and then the werewolves come as kind of like the cavalry and to this point, I don't know who they're fighting or why.
I don't know the stakes. I don't know anything. Exactly. I don't know anything. It just, if I hadn't laughed at that one joke, which was really funny, I probably would have immediately dropped the book. So I don't know what to do anymore. Yeah. I'm probably going to ride this arc out and then probably drop it.
Yeah, it's getting tough. It's getting rough. And the art seemed pretty rushed in a couple pages too.
Yeah, I think that's probably why he's hard to tell. I mean, he's also drawing the backup feature in one of the DC books. I think it's just like he.
It's tough.
I don't know who anyone is or why anything's happening. That's
not a good thing. It's not a good thing.
I don't either. But
I do know that torpedoes work on land, though. That's all I know.
So you want to talk about somebody who's got some range? I don't know if you remember, but earlier in this episode, we were talking about Mark Wade.
Oh.
with some messed up stuff that he was doing. Yeah, you don't have to worry about that with the Incredibles comic book that he also had out this week. Listen to me. If you're a parent and you're looking for kids' comics, you want a way to get your kids into comics, because I know a lot of you out there are and do, check out Boom's Incredibles number one. It's an original new story series from Boom about the Incredibles from the movie. And it's just good old-fashioned comic books. I don't know if it's necessarily like something that a lot of adult readers, I guess, are going to want to follow. It wasn't.
Well, is it the kind of thing where, and I didn't read it, so I don't know. So you tell me, is it the kind of thing where if you enjoyed Wade's run on the Fantastic Four, perhaps?
I thought it was a little lighter than that.
Well, yeah, it's probably a little lighter, but like Incredibles are essentially the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And Wade was great on that, so.
It felt to me like he was writing for kids a little more.
Oh, okay.
Was there a sex room?
No, there was no. Well, there might have been, but they didn't label it as such. Okay. It was just a fun little story, and it's like an ongoing thing. So there was some nice big ideas. I think it was not necessarily going to be easily readable for like a little kid, but it might be a really good gateway comic. That's what I kept reading when I was thinking, because it isn't dumb. It's not talking down to me.
I've heard good things about the Boom Children's line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From people who have kids and get them to read comics.
Here's another good one for you to go check out. On the same token, do not give your children Jonah Hex number 48. I'm going to go out and just say that's a definite. Don't do it. At all. This is, what is this, part five?
Four?
I don't know. There's been a big six-part story going on with every character in Jonah Hex ever, and it's just been a big romping
bloodbath
of lots of people getting killed and stuff. This whole thing's actually been really good.
Yeah, it's been really good. It's part this is part 5 of 6. Yeah. The only problem I have with this issue is it took place at night and a lot of it's really dark.
Okay.
But other than that, like this 6-part story has been fantastic, and all these bounty hunters trying to kill Jonah Hex, and he's got a bunch of ragtag allies who he's met along the way in the course of the series, and
but he's never nice to anybody, so you kind of like it always everybody could turn on this one character who's been what's his name?
Backlash?
Chaco, who's been trying to kiss his ass the whole time, finally betrays him and he makes him pay because that's what he does. There was some. I thought actually. Well, I guess you're right. It's kind of dark. That didn't really bother me so much. There's a lot of really dense pages in this, like 10, 12 panel pages, like just indicating action going really fast and all this stuff. It's like you're getting your money's worth on this.
Oh, it took a while to read. You definitely don't feel like you've lost out on anything. But no, I love the dynamic between people that are ostensibly his friends.
Mm-hmm.
And who are still not really his friends, and the woman who likes him but won't, he likes her but won't admit it because they're both the same kind of person. And
God, you're getting your money's worth through these pages. I mean, they're just full.
And the good thing is with the movie coming out, you're at least the book's it's not going anywhere, I'd imagine.
You know what? We have 48 issues. If they were to cancel it tomorrow, I'd be like, hey, who am I complaining to? My God,
never would have suspected it. Now, the new issue of Criminal came out, Criminal the Sinners, part one, number one, which I know I'm happy about. I'm assuming you guys are happy that it's back as well.
It was funny because I listened to Brubaker on Word Balloon recently, and he mentioned it, and I realized it, that he's the only creator using this icon, the icon line of Marvel this year.
Yeah. He might be the last one.
Yeah, possibly. it was good to get Criminal back, although I gotta say and this might just be me because I'm not as big on the crime stuff as you guys are, but I was like it was more of the same.
I gotta tell you, he took me out of it a few times because he has references to people he knows in it, and it happened like 3 times or so. I'm trying to remember
all the victims, all the crime victims were people.
Yeah, exactly.
And
it was him, and it was a few times like that, and that's something he's always done, but it rips me out of it a lot now.
Yeah, but not everybody knows who he knows. So, I mean,
I know.
Right. Yeah.
But
I thought it was a strong setup issue, but it didn't blow me away because it was a lot of setting up this new. It's a new and interesting world. I really want to get the next issue because what he set up is going to, I think, be really good.
Did the art seem a little different to you? I mean, I don't know. It felt like there was just a little less on the page. Not in terms of, I guess, in terms of rendering. I mean, like it was just a little less fine than it normally is. I guess it might just be me. I didn't notice
that. Although I don't think he's been Sean Phillips has been quite as good since Incognito.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the thing is, I mean, if you think about it, Incognito just ended, and then they put this out right after. So, you know, there was no break from it. It just didn't seem quite as great. And you know, Sean, this is me saying, you know, Sean Phillips is easily one of my favorite artists working in comics. It just didn't seem quite up to his normal excellence. Not a bad thing, but yeah,
what was really good was the interview in the back.
Yeah, the Darwin interview. Yeah, that was great.
Which I don't normally read the back matter on these books, because I'm just not interested. But I did read it. It was a Darwin Cook and Ed Brubaker interviewed by Tom Spurgeon
Tom Bergeron hosts.
That's the name that's always in my head. It was good. It was very good.
In a completely different direction, X-Babies number one came out from Marvel. And it featured art by Jacob Chabot, who actually had a story in Strange Tales as well. And the X-Babies is a little, you know, kind of, for those who don't know, they were, you know, introduced in the 80s by Claremont and Art Adams, actually, as they were little send-ups on the X-Men as little, you know, kiddie versions of them in the Mojoverse. But I don't know who wrote it, but the writer nailed it. He just, like, the whole feel of the X-Babies, Greg Siegel, I've never heard of him before. But if you're an X-Men fan, this is just, you know, straight send-up-y fun, and this is a blast to read.
So. Did it come out originally in the same time as Muppet Babies?
At any point, does someone say Mama, Dada, Poop, Poop, Chihuahua?
No.
No, okay.
And also, for those who are curious, in the back of the issue, they print the first appearance of the X-Babies, which was Uncanny X-Men Annual number 12 by Claremont Art Adams, and it was fun to see some Art Adams art from the 80s again.
Now, did that come out around the time of
– Yeah, I think it did, actually, to be honest.
So this is actually – has to be sort of born of Muppet Babies.
It might be. I don't know. I can't –
I think it was. Yeah. I mean, that was a whole
– Baby
– Movement, baby yeah. movement back yeah. then, which yeah. was funny. I loved that cartoon.
Yeah. But yeah. So anyway, but that was fun. So good times.
That was on my post school list of shows to watch.
And you know who did the voice of the mother was the June Lockhart, the mother on Leave It to Beaver was the voice of the woman with the striped socks and Muppet Babies.
Where did you dig that out of?
I have so much stupid knowledge in my head.
Okay, we're gonna add that to the traveling Wilbury.
Was she a Wilbury?
Check in this box.
I believe she slept with Jeff Lynne.
She was a stationary Wilbury.
Yeah.
She didn't move around a lot. The user reviews, that's where you folks on the website can review any of the books that you read.
What website?
And iFanboy.com. I assume that people know that. My God. But then again, never assume that much. Over at iFanboy.com/comics, you can pick out your comics and pick the stuff. And the first user review is from Face. Who reviewed Batman and Robin number 5, gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 2 out of 5. At the time of recording, the pick of the week percentage of the community is 1.4%. It's notably lower than some of the previous issues. I am captivated by Morrison's Batworld. He brought so much to the table, juggling it with the greatest of ease. It's no wonder that he's Geoff Johns' hero. Why I care about Scarlet is simple. She's going to redeem Damian. Somewhere down the line, Morrison will make this happen. It'll likely be a love interest. Lots of talk about the art with iFanboy.com.
Isn't he like Dan, 8?
Yeah. It's warranted.
He's 10.
Philip Tan's killing me here. There were several decent pages, but there were many times where I just had no idea what was taking place. Penguin going out the window seems to be more specific. There were...
not a good reading day for you.
Yeah. Not a good reading day for Josh at all.
Well, you... There's a chat window. There was a very awkward unmasked dick at one time. Please, Jason, keep the hood on.
All right.
I totally agree with his assessment of the issue. I thought the story was great.
It was.
It was one of the better issues, I think, of the run so far, which is saying a lot. But the art was just untenable, and there was a couple of awful panels. The one he references where they get back to the penthouse where they are and they take off their masks. It was just awful. Yeah. It was Damian had looked like a 65-year-old man when he took his mask off. It was gross. it's, you know, I'm having a hard time because I love the, and again, it's only one more issue. He's done after this next issue. It's only a 3-issue arc, so.
That went by very quickly, and thankfully, I'm looking forward to returning to this book when Cameron Stewart comes on.
Yeah. Well, I think you should read these because I think what's going to happen is really important. And some interesting things happen to it. The return of the red-haired Jason Todd, which was the original pre-crisis Jason, which was an interesting development.
I didn't get that. I mean, I knew it was something that you would probably explain to me.
Yeah, and in the original, Jason Todd had two origins because they introduced him right before Crisis on Infinite Earths, and then he got wiped out, and they reintroduced him again. Originally, he was a Dick Grayson clone. He was a son of acrobats who were killed by Killer Croc, and they brought him in, and he had red hair, so they dyed it, so he would look like Robin, and then they wiped him out, and Crisis came back as a street tough.
So is this then supposed to be that other Jason Todd?
Well, Morrison's been using stuff from all eras of Batman.
He doesn't care.
Yeah, no. What I'm wondering, though, is if like this comes out of 52, is there being another Jason Todd who looks nothing like the Jason Todd who we've been looking at?
Well, that's because Philip Pan's awful.
Yeah. Right. Well, there you go. Great cover.
Because quietly. Exactly.
Yeah. Next.
The Punisher Max, he reviewed Sweet Tooth number 2, and he gave the story a 3 out of 5, the art a 4 out of 5. It's always nice to hear from Frank. And the pick of the week percentage for the group, or the group of people who are not us, was 5.4%. And Punisher Max writes, "With issue number 2, I'm impressed, but also a little disappointed. Don't get me wrong, I enjoyed it quite a bit, but I will definitely continue reading it, and I just wanted a little more out of this. The first issue set up a really intriguing and different kind of premise, which I liked. I was hoping that in this issue the premise would either be fleshed out quite a bit with exactly what was going on, or I would be okay still having all the questions I had from issue 1. This didn't really give me either of those things. The questions that it did answer, I didn't seem to like the answers to, and I was just a little more frustrated with the questions that it didn't answer. Overall, I have high hopes to where this can go, and I hope that it'll bring me back in the overall story as well. While not the best book out there, it's definitely worth a shot."
The questions it did answer, I just didn't like those answers.
I read it, it was just like, man, we got questions, man, but they ain't got answers. But the answers to those questions are maybe not the ones you want. You know what I mean, man?
I do have to agree. I honestly, it was disappointing, but this issue went by very fast for me.
I decided with this issue I'm going to trades. It just wasn't enjoyable as a single issue.
Yeah, well, but that said, we've heard a lot of, you know, insider buzz that issue 3 is the was it issue 3? The one
I thought it was this one.
No, I thought it was issue 3. Was it like with issue 3 it is like, oh my god, you know, like that sort of thing. So
I think the idea with this one is that it sets you up at the end of the last one and through most of this one you think it's going to go in one direction and then they yank that out to raise the stakes.
Yeah.
Even more. Although it could be said that you could have let this play out a little bit longer so that the loss was more
I think it's interesting because, you know, again, we talked about Jeff Lemire a lot this summer and this is his first foray into doing monthly books and it's curious to see him work out the pacing and that sort of thing, and Connor, I totally understand why you'd go to trade because I think it's probably going to read great in trade. But I'm curious to see the progression through issues. So
yeah.
So cool. Sure. So go to ifanboy.com where you can go to the comics section at ifanboy.com/comics, do your pull list and your rate and review your books, and we might read one of your reviews on a future show.
And if you like any of these books we've talked about, you don't want to go to your store to buy them, you can get them a discount comic book service. They've got monthly specials up to 75% off, with 40% off all the major publishers and flat rate shipping on all orders in the U.S. of $5.95. You can buy anything that is listed in previews. They got over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock. You can track your orders online. You can get all your comics at DCBS. And that's DCBService.com.
All right, it is time for it's that time of the month. It's time for the book of the month. And some apologies. Normally we try to get the book of the month up the first Monday of the month, but hey, I was on vacation, so I'm sorry. But if you're listening to this now, the book of the month review is up on ifanboy.com, and it is the previously mentioned, a little foreshadowing earlier in the show, Matt Kent and his latest book, Three Story, published by Dark Horse Comics.
Well, the full title is Three Story, The Secret History of a Giant Man.
Correct. And I forget what the cost of this is, but it's affordable.
A piece of your soul.
Wow.
That's expensive.
For those of you who don't know about Matt Kent, he probably – I'm a little late to the game here, but he probably put out one of the best graphic novels of 2008, and that was Super Spy, published by Top Shelf. If not one of the best in the definitely the top 10 of 2008 for me at least.
Are we sure it was 2008?
Might have been 2007.
Could have been.
It could have been 2007. It came like at the end of the year. It might have been 2007.
I can check.
Okay. The days run together.
They do. Also, check to see how much this book is while you're at it. So this is his next book after Super Spy came out. And Super Spy, if you didn't read it, it was a very complex series of short stories that all tied into a greater plot. That was just – the first third was completely confusing and difficult to read. But as you got into the first half of the book, you got it, and then it became so much fun to read the rest of it. It was very intricate. It was very very layered, that sort of thing. Three Story is very different from Super Spy in that the story is actually very simple. It's the story of, like we said, the secret history of this giant man. This guy who was born, who is who has some sort of affliction or some sort of problem, the guy named Craig Pressgang, and he grows to be very, very tall. The title of the book, Three Story, is actually a play on words in that there are three individual stories in this book, but then also he grows to be three stories tall. Huh? You like that? So the book is broken
up. It has multiple meanings.
Yes.
I don't follow.
The book is broken up into three points of view. The first story is told from the point of view of his mother, who deals with him being born and raising him and the difficulties that come from that. And then the second story is focused on his wife and who's focused on living with him and being married to him and having a child with him and the difficulties that come with that. And then the last story is told from his daughter's point of view, who is trying to piece together his life after he's moved on. So basically, what happens is that he is able to, as he grows up and gets really tall, he gets a lot of public attention. The CIA notices him and decide to make him a secret agent, saying that the best secret agents are the ones that are out in the open. And little things happen with that. I don't want to get into specific story, specifics, because the story is just it develops very, I don't want to say slowly, but at its own pace, and it completely drew me in and it completely grabbed me in. On top of the fact that Matt Kint's art is just absolutely beautiful, and he's able to.
I read some of this. I didn't read it all, but that was the thing that really stood out to me was I've had no exposure to him before, and it was just. It was beautiful.
You'd like Super Spy if you got through it.
Yeah.
You got to get to the end of Super Spy. By the way, 2007. Go ahead.
Okay, 2007. Nice. You got to stick with Super Spy and go all the way to the end of it. This one read much faster than Super Spy. Where Super Spy was complex, this is very nuanced. This book has a lot to do with, like, there's not a lot of dialogue. It has a lot to do with, like, looks and mood and feeling and things like that. But it was just a joy to read. And I love the way Matt Kint is able to almost do like a mixed media with his books, where in addition to the sequential story, to the story of the panels telling the story, you'll turn a page and it will be a page from Craig's, the main character's biography. Like it's a page of prose and like with photographs or whatever. You turn a page and there'll be an advertisement that he did an endorsement for. And it's just really interesting, and his graphic design skills and stuff like that, like they look like these ads from the 60s, and they're very Mad Men-esque and stuff like that. There's a great two-page spread of the blueprint of his home, the tower that they build for him to live in. Just little
right up your alley.
Yeah, exactly. Little things like that. So I don't know. The book is it's about 200 pages, and every page has a little reward on each page, whether it's something that he's done in the art or something with the story or something with one of those mixed media pages. It's just a lot of fun, and proving that Matt Kint is probably one of the, from what I found, one of the more underrated, unique creators out there today.
It's a gorgeous book, and it's really sparse, but in a good way.
Yep.
Yeah, the pages breathe a lot. I mean,
there's a very languid pace to it, which is nice. It's sort of, this is totally different, but in the same way that Moon Knight was, the first issue of Moon Knight was very sparse, but also exciting. This is the same kind of layout. Sort of, you're not overwhelmed with dialogue, you're not overwhelmed with word balloons.
Yep.
And the art really gets to breathe, and this is a beautiful, it's a gorgeous book.
Yeah. And the book, it's sad. I mean, it's a sad story.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got this guy who is a likable guy who had this thing happen to him, and there's nothing you can do about it, and how he dealt with it, and how his relationships, and how much he loved his wife, and how much his mother, cared for him, and his daughter just trying to understand who he was, and it was just fascinating. Just totally fascinating.
There's an inherent sadness in his work.
There is. There really, really is.
It's very moving just looking at it.
Yeah.
It's because it's on those yellow stained pages.
Well, that'll get you every time. But like when he yeah. goes into the mixed media, when there's some sort of looks watercolory panels that are just yeah. very. There's a lot of emotion packed into the artwork.
But yeah, so I don't know. I loved it. When I got my hands on the book, I devoured it very quickly and then proceeded to tell everybody when it came out to go pick it up. And so I urge you to go pick it up as well. I don't think it's available at InStockTrades.com yet, but we're working with them to try to get it there. But you can probably get it on Amazon or
from,
your comic
yeah, it's
store.
Just Dark Horse so it's not like
put it out. So yeah, so it shouldn't be that mm-hmm. hard to get. Yeah. And it really, like, if you want it, like, we talk a lot about independent books and alternative books. If you want to take a step away from the norm and try something different, this is a good kind of, it's a complete graphic novel, and it's like, honestly, I'll say it's probably like nothing you've read yet. So if you didn't read Super Spy, if you read Super Spy, then you know how good this can be. So go to ifanboy.com, read my whole review, there. And I urge you to pick it up. It's definitely worth it. It's got to be like $12
and
maybe,
a piece of your soul, your immortal soul.
Yes.
Wow, you're really pushing that. We talked about a whole lot of books this week, so we're going to be skipping emails and voicemails. That doesn't mean we don't love you. Make sure you get to the website every Friday, and you can read our letter column where we answer emails also. And then you can write in at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can call us at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Leave a question on the voicemail. We do like that, and we're going to get back to those next week. Now.
In the meantime, quick kind of shout out to you all. And if you're wondering how you can help out iFanboy, every week we do this podcast and we do the website, and everything's totally for free for you to enjoy to make your comic book experience more fun. So there's a couple things you can do to help us out to keep our lights on, keep everything moving. You can go to iFanboy.com and click on all the banners there. Check out the products and services that our sponsors are offering. They're advertising with us because they want you to find out about their products. So click on banners, do some investigation there, buy the products from our sponsors. We really appreciate it. You can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, where anything you buy from Amazon.com helps us out in the process. You can buy your graphic novels there, your comic books, CDs, DVDs, video games, whatever you want. Anything you get from Amazon can help us out. And then finally, the two best things you can do if you want to help out iFanboy is go to ifanboy.com/store. That's where you can find our t-shirts. We've still got some Power Responsibility t-shirts left, and you can pre-order the Herm shirt, which is going to press this month. So you can pick that up and get them. Well, supplies are limited, so get them while they last. They're both $15. And if you're going to a convention, I know this weekend was the Baltimore Comic Con. I'm looking forward to hearing about all the people wearing iFanboy shirts at that con. Wear them to cons. It's a good way to show your support. And finally, you can become an iFanboy member. You can also sign up at ifanboy.com/store. For $4 a month or $42 a year, you get the prize pack, which consists of some buttons, a sticker, and a random comic book from one of our collections. For $10 a month or $100 a year, you get all that plus the iFanboy members t-shirt. And plus also, iFanboy members are eligible for the great iFanboy giveaways. And we're going to be doing a giveaway in a couple of minutes. And the only way you can win is by being a member. So we really appreciate everybody who's a member currently or has helped us out. And we hope the rest of you can find it in your hearts to
You also get some of our well. Immortal soul. I don't know if you knew that.
Our immortal soul.
He's been watching vampire movies again, hasn't he?
And Josh's marriage.
Yep. Well then. So like we mentioned, we're going to be giving some stuff away. Connor, what do we got?
October's giveaway month at iFanboy this week, and in the next two shows, there's going to be big giveaways. So if you want to see what they are, you can go check this out at iFanboy.com. They're right there at the top. There's a red post showing you what we're giving away. So if you want to be eligible to win these prizes, these fabulous, fabulous prizes, you should become an iFanboy member today. That's how you win. And today's giveaway is the Top Cow giveaway, and the Top Cow giveaway winner is Douglas Hills.
Yay!
Yay! Douglas wins a bunch of stuff from Top Cow, our friends at Top Cow. He won the Magdalena Blood Divine Volume 1, the Pilot Season Volume 1, Impaler Volume 1, Top Cow's Best of Michael Turner, Freshman Volume 1, Strike Force Volume 1, Hunter Killer Volume 1, and a beautiful Wanted Assassin's Edition hardcover.
That's so a lot of books. And we
that's eight big trades from Top Cow.
And we should thank our friends over at Top Cow for providing that and sponsoring this giveaway. That was very generous of them to give us a ton of stuff.
Yes, so if you want to become a member and win these things, all you got to do is sign up. And the next giveaway is a Funimation prize pack, which consists of, I believe, four DVD sets. It's like over $100 worth of DVDs right there. And then the final one is a pretty kick-ass one if you're into an old Marvel comics. So go
Am
check
I
it out.
Am I eligible for that last one?
No.
No, but if you got 2 weeks to come over and read them.
You're going to be
I will
gone
say
next
this.
Week.
I will say this. Those comics that you can see on iFanboy include Jack Kirby art and Gene Colan art.
Hold on.
Ooh.
Yeah, so go check those out at fanboy.com. There's a red post right on the top showing you the giveaways. If you want to win, you got to become a member. You got to be in it to win it.
Yes.
Like the lotto.
And also want to take a quick mention to mention our sister site, Murmur.com, has a podcast as well. And episode 9 is coming out this week, and that's going to feature – we're going to be talking about some new music as well as some movies, some cool stuff like that. So tune in. And
will you talk about the Traveling Wilburys for
no,
me?
No, I can guarantee we're not talking about the Traveling
45 Wilburys. 45 minutes. That's Murmur number 10.
Ooh, let's do that. We'll totally do them full.
We're
going to
do a track-by-track analysis of the first record. Yeah.
Yep.
So
great. I'm Not Alone Anymore, also a great song.
Get to iFanboy.com and read the Pick of the Week review from Connor and the conversation that happens there afterwards, and then all the other stuff. Every single book that comes out in a week has a potential conversation going on under it, and a great deal of them do. So make sure you go in there and check that out. There's all sorts of fresh things that come up every single day that get written on the site, things to talk about, news that's fun to talk about, all that kind of stuff. So make sure you get to iFanboy.com. A lot of people still don't even listen to the show and don't go there, and you should, because if you like this, there's just more of it, basically.
And although, for the first time this week, we had somebody come to the website and didn't know there were shows.
Wow.
Well, that's...
Yeah, it was the opposite.
Well.
It was shocking.
We're clearly not doing our jobs. Go to ifanboy.com/about, and you will be able to tell who we all are and ways to hook up with us on the web otherwise, other social networking, things like that. The video show that we do is still on fall break. However... here's two things that I can tell you. One, we're putting up reprints, and it's kind of fun to go back and see some of the old episodes that you might not have seen for, 2-3 years, something like that.
A beardless
two,
Josh.
Two, there are rumblings. That's all I'm telling you. there's motion.
There's been meetings.
We're talking about meeting.
Right. There's pre-meeting meetings.
Yeah. So there.
You, as we said earlier, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. When you call and leave a voicemail, please tell us your name and where you're from. It makes it more exciting. Plus, we don't like to air the anonymous ones because you're cheaters. There, I said it.
Jesus. And finally, if you like what you're listening to, and I don't know why, you can go to iTunes and where you can write a review. And we want to thank everybody, all the hundreds of people who've written iTunes reviews. It helps people discover the show and also shares, you know, it gives you, it lets you air your opinions about it, share what you think about iFanboy. Or better yet, tell people that you know that like comics who might not listen to the show. If everyone just tells 5 people, think about how many people would be aware of iFanboy after that.
It's
so,
not a pyramid scheme.
It's not. Not at all.
It's not.
So please, we thank everybody who's helped us get the word out. And don't forget to sign up for a membership if you want those great giveaways. We're going to keep giving away stuff out all the way for the rest of our existence. So become a member.
Well, wait, whoa.
Oh, hey, our souls.
That's a big commitment.
Yeah. So
3 weeks, definitely, yeah. The next 3 weeks. There'll be more after that. But.
So, excellent. Well, it's good to be back, boys. I got to admit.
Who are you?
Yeah. I was going to – you're – Ray.
All right.
Go.
Well, you didn't blow the audition, I can tell you that.
Oh, that's good.
Thanks very much on behalf of the band. I hope you enjoyed the audition.
Until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor Wilbury.
I can't follow that. I'm Josh.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over. In your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.